Blog Talk Radio.
It's off his new album entitled, the song title is No Banker Left Behind. The name of his new album is Pull Up Some Dust and Sit Down. You can find that album at his website, which is nonsuch.com, nonesuch.com. And I would suggest you listen to it because you can listen to every song that's on his album on his website. Anyway, today, of course, we're talking about Occupy Wall Street and the national and international movement that it's become. The first clip I'd like to play right now would be Democracy Now! Opened this morning with a little recap of everything that went on this weekend because, as we know, it's gone pretty much global. So here we go, a short clip from Democracy Now!'s report on Occupy Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. America, this is Democracy Now!
The rallying cry was Occupy Wall Street. The idea was to come down here to make your voice heard about the injustices of Wall Street and the financial system, and the idea just spread like wildfire. And it was always understood that the process was always going to rule. The process of building consensus and arriving at our demands, at our action plan, that has always been the driving factor here.
Today, as the numbers swell and the media debates just who these people are, we pack up our gear and head to the Occupy Wall Street encampment to hear people speaking for themselves. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Police raided the Occupy Boston encampment early this morning, arresting about 100 peaceful demonstrators in the latest crackdown on protests linked to the Occupy Wall Street movement. Some 200 police officers, including many in riot gear, approached the protest site at about 1:30 this morning. Police began making arrests after giving protesters 2 minutes to disperse. One Vietnam veteran said he was knocked to the ground during the arrests. Organizers of Occupy Boston said the police arrested a legal observer from the National Lawyers Guild and 4 medics who were attempting to care for protesters injured in the police raid. The arrest came hours after thousands of people marched in one of the largest protests organized by Occupy Boston. Many students from local colleges took part. Meanwhile, in Illinois, thousands took to the streets of Chicago in a solidarity protest with Occupy Wall Street. A coalition called Stand Up Chicago organized the march to protest the Futures Industry Association and the American Mortgage Bankers Association. Police arrested 26 demonstrators, many wearing Chicago Teachers Union t-shirts, who linked arms and sat down chanting, "Save our schools, save our homes." In New York, Mayor Michael Bloomberg suggested Monday protesters at Occupy Wall Street could stay indefinitely. He told reporters, quote, "The bottom line is people want to express themselves, and as long as they obey the laws, we'll allow them to." Today is day 25 of the protest encampment in New York. It also looks like protests may continue indefinitely in Washington, D.C. The U.S. Park Police have agreed to extend a permit to allow the Occupy 2011 Stop the Machine protest to continue in Washington's Freedom Plaza near the White House for the next 4 months. Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, said she plans to protest until there's change.
We are here to stay. We're here just like we were here yesterday and the day before that. It really doesn't matter to us that our permit has run out. We feel like this is a public square. We are the public, and we are occupying the square, so we will stay here.
In economic news, a new study by the Congressional Budget Office has found President Obama's jobs bill could be fully paid for by a proposed new tax on millionaires. The study said a proposed 5.6% surtax on millionaires would raise nearly $453 billion over 10 years, more than enough to pay for the $447 billion jobs bill. A new report details widespread and systemic torture at sites run by the U.S.-backed Afghan intelligence services and Afghan National Police. While the report does not assess whether American officials have known about the abuse, it does raise serious questions about whether the United States is benefiting from information obtained from torture victims. Made possible by interviews with over 300 prisoners over the last year, the report could set in motion American laws banning the U.S. from providing assistance to military units.
All righty. Well, we just wanted to catch the short blurb that they had on Occupy Wall Street National. And it is going national, it's going global. For information on where to find out the closest movement towards you in your area, go to occupytogether.org. Also, this show is being brought to you by roundtree7.com. That's the number 7. I'm one of the writers over there, as is our usual host, Gwendolyn Berry. It's a great site. We like to call it one of the best sites on the web. And once again, that's Roundtree7, the number 7.com. This weekend, I watch a show regularly. It's just started. It's called Up with Chris Hayes. It's on at the crack of friggin' dawn for me on the left coast. and they had Naomi Klein and Van Jones on. He wasn't wearing his move-on hat, which was kind of interesting, but Naomi Klein still wasn't buying everything that Van was selling on the show, which I appreciated. I'm going to play that clip now. It's the beginning of the clip I like because it has a little bit of George Carlin in it. So and George has been gone for quite a while now, but this is like a 6-minute clip, but it's a back and forth between Naomi Klein and Van Jones about the Occupy Wall Street movement.
The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear.
We cut that clip right in an opportune moment since we are on one of those big media companies. George Carlin from the film Life is Worth Losing says most media are controlled. He says all politicians are there to give you an illusion of choice. And the reason I wanted to play that clip, we played this because I was down talking to people in Occupy Wall Street, and you heard this same kind of thing again and again, rejecting party affiliation, rejecting partisan identity, even rejecting ideological affiliation, left or right. I talked to a guy on Thursday, I guess, a guy named Andy Smith, and I want to play you what he said to me down there.
Because you said we're not right and left. It's not right and left.
We're up and down. And I know that's a really, that could be scary for some people to hear. Like, I realize that. It's about class. It's not about political party. Class is a divide. And people can unite around class. They can't unite around political parties or race or religion. Easy unite.
I worry about, and I pressed him, we had a good conversation about this, that you end up in a place of sort of political nihilism in this respect, which is if you say they're all the same, and you hear this is a very familiar American attitude. I mean, you hear this all the time from the disaffected, from independents. They're all the same, they're all corrupt, they're all bought and paid for. And you hear a lot of that down on Wall Street, and I wonder whether that is that does let people off the hook. Precisely.
But the thing is, when you get I have a second grader, and you know, when he gets his report card, there's a reality to it. Now, he may know, well, the teacher doesn't like me. No, hold on a second. Both parties, in the face of the biggest economic catastrophe since the Great Depression, have failed to respond effectively. The Democrats had 60 votes in the Senate, Obama the president, and the best speaker ever, Pelosi, running the House, and they were unable to respond effectively. Now we're in a situation where it looks like we had a change election. I think we have to take seriously the fact that something is wrong. D.C. is off the rails. D.C. has been stuck on stupid for, you know, months now, as the pain threshold has gotten worse. That's not nihilism. That's pain.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate for one second, though, right? Which is that they passed an $800 billion Recovery Act, which
should have been twice as big.
Which should have been twice as big, but was also larger in real terms than anything passed during the Great Depression as a single act of Congress. They passed Dodd-Frank, which, there are all sorts of problems with Dodd-Frank, which is the financial reform bill, but they fought tooth and nail to try to get that passed. I mean, the path of least resistance for the White House would have been to do nothing, right? They didn't try to do something with Dodd-Frank. They passed health care, which I know this litany is familiar, but I want to lay it out, because they passed health care, which, again, the path of least resistance would have been not to pass health care, just leave it alone. But they fought and they fought, and they took huge political losses, expended a tremendous amount of political capital for this bill. So it seems to me, if you say, well, they're both...
But let me tell you what he didn't do.
I would like to interject here. Chris Hayes does seem to be a bit of an Obama apologist during the show, so just bear that in mind. Basically, I'm playing this clip because I want to hear the give and take. I want you to hear the give and take between Naomi Klein and Van Jones, so I'll go back to it now.
The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear.
We cut that clip right in an opportune moment since we are on one of those big media companies. George Carlin from the film Life is Worth Losing says most media are controlled. He says all politicians are there to give you an illusion of choice. And the reason I wanted to play that clip, we played this because I was down talking to people in Occupy Wall Street, and you heard this same kind of thing again and again, rejecting party affiliation, rejecting partisan identity, even rejecting ideological affiliation, left or right. I talked to a guy on Thursday, I guess, a guy named Andy Smith, and I want to play you what he said to me down there.
Because you said we're not right and left. It's not right and left.
We're up and down. And I know that's a really, that can be scary for some people to hear. Like, I realize that. It's about class. It's not about political party. Class is a divide. And people can unite around class. They can't unite around political parties or race or religion. Easy unite.
I worry about, and I pressed him, we had a good conversation about this, that you end up in a place of sort of political nihilism in this respect, which is if you say they're all the same, and you hear this is a very familiar American attitude. I mean, you hear this all the time from the disaffected, from independents. They're all the same. They're all corrupt. They're all bought and paid for. And you hear a lot of that down on Wall Street. And I wonder whether that is that does let people off the hook precisely.
But the thing is, when you get I have a second grader, and you know when he gets his report card, there's a reality to it. Now he may know the teacher doesn't like me. Now hold on a second. Both parties, in the face of the biggest economic catastrophe since the Great Depression, have failed to respond effectively. The Democrats had 60 votes in the Senate, Obama the president, and the best speaker ever, Pelosi, running the House, and they were unable to respond effectively. Now we're in a situation where it looks like we had a change election. I think we have to take seriously the fact that something is wrong. D.C. is off the rails. D.C. has been stuck on stupid for months now as the pain threshold's gotten worse. That's not nihilism. That's pain.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate for 1 second though, right? Which is that they passed an $800 billion Recovery Act, which
should have been twice as big.
Which should have been twice as big, but was also larger in real terms than anything passed during the Great Depression as a single act of Congress. They passed Dodd-Frank, which there are all sorts of problems with Dodd-Frank, which is the financial reform bill, but they fought tooth and nail to try to get that passed. I mean, the path of least resistance for the White House would have been to do nothing, right? They didn't try to do something with Dodd-Frank. They passed health care, which I know this litany is familiar, but I want to lay it out because they passed health care, which, again, the path of least resistance would have been not to pass health care, just leave it alone. But they fought and they fought, and they took huge political losses, expended a tremendous amount of political capital for this bill. So it seems to me if you say, well, they're both...
But let me tell you what they didn't do. Here's what they didn't do. And this is something I think Naomi was trying to say earlier, and I would like to underscore. We didn't mobilize the people. There was a lot of subcommittee stuff. There was a lot of inside the Beltway baseball talk and public options, that kind of stuff. But what makes a difference in America is what you're seeing right now. When the people are given the idea that their participation, their demonstration, the visible support, we spent 2.5 years. We're the only people who marched and protested in America. We're the right wing.
Right.
And guess what? It turns out, as the Tea Party proved, and as these young people and struggling folks on Wall Street are proving, public demonstration matters. And there was a sense from the administration, from the D.C. Democrats, that you need to sit down, shut up, and we will deal with it. And I think that it turned out that was wrong. And so I think that's important.
I cut you off, Naomi. Sorry.
No, I think that what people are rejecting there is the idea that they're just kind of the street heat for the Democratic Party, right? And they're just there to kind of make Obama do it because it's a deeper structural critique. And I think what's best and most fun and most refreshing about hanging out at Occupy Wall Street, and I don't know,
are the drone circles and free hugs.
Yeah.
But aside from that,
so many hugs, so much tofu.
The Women's Committee issued a statement that said to the guys at Occupy Wall Street, not everyone wants that.
That is awesome. That's a great. But the thing that's the most fun about being down there
is that they're not talking about about big P politics inside baseball, the election campaign, because I think the problem, and thinking about how what they're doing is going to affect 2012, they're focusing on the issues.
Our job.
And they're focusing, I mean, it isn't your only job, though.
Right.
I mean,
right.
And I think this is this country is more obsessed with electoral politics than any other in the world, I believe. And it is corrupting and corrosive to the building of social movements. Because what happens is every 2 years, whatever independent movements are being built, whether it's about climate change, whether it's about the war, whether it's about inequality, gets completely funneled into let's get the Democrats elected. And I think what's interesting about this moment is people are talking about, okay, what is structurally wrong? And so they're talking about money in politics, and they're talking about Citizens United, and they're talking about the idea that corporations have the same status as people. And so what is structurally wrong? And that's very exciting.
Yeah.
I think the concern is the idea that okay, we're just gonna be the sort of angry arm of the Democratic Party, and you can just turn this outrage into some very reformist pieces of legislation, whereas they actually want to get at the core of it. Why is it broken? And that's what's exciting.
I agree with that. I would note that the anger on the right was channeled into electoral channels, and it was extremely effective the way they channeled the electoral factions. They primaried a bunch of folks. They knocked off these incumbent Republicans.
And clip was brought to you by crooksandliars.com. It wasn't exactly the complete clip I thought it was going to be, but you get the idea that Naomi Klein was basically countering what Van Jones had said. You know, he was trying to soften his approach to how the Obama administration has let everybody down, whereas she was saying, nope, he screwed up and people are pissed off. The other big news this weekend, too, was when the gentleman, and I use that term loosely, from the American Spectator, the editor there, admitted that he infiltrated and actually escalated the D.C. museum protest. And I tried to download that clip earlier, but it didn't work right. But the whole thing was that, James O'Keefe... everybody remembers that moron, but this guy was actually an editor for the American Spectator. I'm going to read from a Washington Post article on it. It says, conservative journalist says he infiltrated and escalated the D.C. museum protest. The article, part of the article is as follows. A conservative journalist has admitted to infiltrating the group of protesters who clashed with security at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum on Saturday, and he openly claims to have helped instigate the events that prompted the museum to close. Patrick Howley, you bag of crap, an assistant editor at the American Spectator, says he joined the group under the pretense that he was a demonstrator. As far as anyone knew, I was part of this cause, a cause that I had infiltrated the day before in order to mock and undermine in the pages of the American Spectator, Howley wrote. The article also notes that the language in his story has since been changed without explanation. The article goes on to say, a group called October 2011 Movement had organized a march in protest, organized the march in order to protest the U.S. government's use of unmanned drones overseas, joined by a few members of the D.C. branch of Occupy Wall Street, as the Post reported Saturday. Halley writes that a small number of protesters, himself included, had tried to move past the security guards at the main entrance of the museum. He says that one protester next to him got into a shoving match with a security guard in an antechamber before they hit the second set of doors that led to the museum itself. The guard pepper sprayed the protester, spraying Halley as well. But, according to his account, Howley was determined to escalate the protest further. I wasn't giving up before I had my story, he writes, describing how he continued to rush past security into the museum itself. I strained to glance behind me at the dozens of protesters that I was sure were backing me up, and then I got hit again, this time with a cold realization. I was the only one who made it through the doors. So I was surprised to find myself a fugitive Saturday afternoon, stumbling around aircraft displays with just enough vision to keep tabs on my uniformed pursuers. The museum is now closed, screamed one of the guards as alarm sounded. Everybody make your way to the exits immediately. Howley then had the balls to chide the protesters for not taking his lead and rushing into the museum after being pepper sprayed. I would like to add that this movement is non-violent. If they're told not to move, they're told they can't go forward, they're not going to do it. So he was obviously trying to escalate this into a violent confrontation. Let me finish here. Let me finish reading. It says, in the absence of ideological uniformity, these protesters have no political power. They don't want any, you asshole. Their only chance, as I saw it, was to push the envelope and go bold. But if today's demonstration was any indicator, they don't have what it takes to even do that. The article goes on to say, at the same time, Howley criticizes the movement as being disruptive, even though he personally helped catalyze the shutdown of a national museum. He warns ominously, what began on Wall Street is now spreading, and the question still remains, is it dangerous? Socialist indoctrination methods are surprisingly effective. And as the Crooks and Liars article that I'm quoting from goes on to say, Howley scrubbed his original post and posted a second edited version since. Here's the kind of nonsense we get to look forward to as those on the right get more desperate to shed a bad light on any of the protests going on. And this was written by Heather on, it was posted on October 11th on Crooks and Liars Video Cafe. They also have a 6-minute video of the whole thing. But that's what pisses me off, is that we have to deal with the right pulling these dirty tricks once again, trying to make the left or the progressives look bad. The whole movement from the beginning has said they're nonviolent, and yet he's going to go ahead and, you know, be a jackass and try to make them look bad. We have a caller on the line. I'm going to go ahead and open the line. This is a caller from the 646 area code. Okay, caller, you're live.
I am. Can you
hear
me?
Yes, you are. Yes, I can.
And you can't recognize my voice.
Hi, Gwen.
How you doing? I just wanted to call in and say one thing. When you are supposed to be an agent provocateur, you don't let people know that that's why you were there and that's what you were doing. I mean, that's like the guy who showed up at yesterday at Occupy Wall Street in Liberty Plaza. You know, I can't remember his name, but he's the guy who did the hooker thing with, you know.
Yeah, James O'Keefe.
Yeah, yeah. He was strolling around the park there. These folks are trying to, well, basically what they're trying to do is grasp some publicity for themselves. It's all about me, me, me. And you're going to have that, I think, in these protests. I wanted to ask you too, Dusty, if you were going to talk about Boston. I was watching last night.
See, I didn't get to see it because I spent 8 hours going between my house and Los Angeles to the doctor's office, and I was really hurting bad when I got home. So I didn't get to really do my homework, and I do apologize for that, which is...
I wouldn't worry about that. But Boston got busted last night in a bad way. In the wee hours of the morning, it was like something out of Kentucky in 1930, you know, or 1920. They basically went in the wee hours of the morning onto the green overhang of the Rose Kennedy Park where they had been encamped, and they were actually beating on Veterans for Peace. They were nice-working them.
Well, they've been pulling that in several places. They've been, you know, they got nasty on the ones in Sacramento, too, and arrested a lot of them. Even though that was a relatively small demonstration, they got nasty on those guys, too. So it depends on what city you're in, whether the cops are behaving themselves or not. That's, you know, my whole point to the story is between James O'Keefe, that bag of shit, who says his probation officer actually approved his visit to Occupy Wall Street, and this idiot from American Spectator, who I think basically made himself look like shit by even writing an article, you know, he's trying to point out that they don't have the balls to be, you know, to get into it with the cops when their whole message all along has been, we're not going to be violent. We're not going to go up against the police. We're not going to, you know, tear up anything. We're just, this is just a movement that, you know, is totally nonviolent. So in my point of view, the asshole from American Spectator just made himself look even worse by not only, number one, writing an article and admitting he was trying to screw up the march into the museum, but then he calls him to task because he says they don't have the balls to get in there and mix it up. You know, make up your fucking mind, moron. You know, that the whole movement has been saying from the get-go that they're nonviolent. So, you know, James O'Keefe and this idiot, what's his name? I want to say it again. From the American Spectator, Patrick Howley.
Yeah,
yeah, I just want to say once again that they're assholes and they're trying to undermine the movement and, you know, get some another 15 minutes of fame for themselves. And that's what's so disgusting about these guys.
Well, they're not really worth much of a. I don't think they're even worth worrying about. They, except for the fact that they did get all of those protesters hurt with the pepper spray.
Exactly. And I think they make themselves look bad.
They actually opened themselves to lawsuits from what's-his-name, David, said on Keith Olbermann last night, that they were going to, he intimated that they were checking out, you know, what kind of legal path to take with these people. And I think that's pretty important, you know.
I was going to play that. I actually did finally get downloaded the David Swanson when he talks about the museum plant. So I'll play that when you and I are done talking.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead, Marlon.
Okay.
I just wanted to stop in and say that was a really great clip. I agree with you on that one. Well, I agree with you anyway. We have the same politics mostly. Stopping by to say hi.
Thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate that. I'm going to go ahead now and play David Swanson when he was on Keith Olbermann's show last night talking about this asshole from the American Spectator. Here it is.
As yet, there are no reports of arrests nor disturbances from Freedom Plaza, where organizers have been speaking with police, but violence did break out Saturday when security guards at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum fired pepper spray at October 2011 marchers, protesting drone attacks, American militarism, and the Afghan war. And among those sprayed was organizer David Swanson.
At the Air and Space Museum, I just got pepper sprayed. I'm trying to go inside.
Mr. Swanson will be one of my guests in a few moments. All of this happened with the help of an assistant editor for the conservative American Spectator named Patrick Howley. Mr. Howley claimed he came as a journalist. He apparently stayed as a provocateur, writing in an online column that was later sanitized on the Spectator's site that, quote, as far as anyone knew, I was part of this cause, a cause that I had infiltrated the day before in order to mock and undermine. After pushing past a protester and security guard, Howley entered the museum. I was the only one who made it through the doors. Mr. Howley claimed he wasn't giving up before he had his story. He got a face full of pepper spray for his efforts, but the only story he has is his own. Howley also mocked the protesters for not having what he called courage to follow his lead and enter the museum. Another possible case of infiltration today at Wall Street, Gawker.com, posting this video of a man who looks surprisingly like the notorious Republican frat boy, James O'Keefe, evidently one of the last 10 Americans to still own a colored shirt with a white collar. 1991 would like it back. These protesters in Des Moines didn't need a provocateur to risk arrest and make their point. 32 of them were hauled off by police when they refused to leave the park area in front of the state capitol in solidarity with Occupation Wall Street. The protests have also spread to Toledo, Ohio, to Charlotte, North Carolina, where weekend protests stretched into today, and back in New York's Zuccotti Park, where protesters focused their anger on the media arm of the right-wing machine. Geraldo Rivera, a long way away from his New York street cred, beat a hasty retreat. Perhaps he did not think the protesters knew what Fox News has been saying about them. Lies might be the least of it. He might try slander. David Swanson, an organizer of the October 2011 protests in Washington and a campaigner for RootsAction.org, joins me now, as promised, from Washington. Thank you for your time tonight, sir.
Good to be here.
What's the latest with the protest at Freedom Plaza? Is everybody still there? Do we know what the status is?
The permit expired at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. today in terms of having to have everything out, and the police came by and we asked them to speak with us publicly and they refused, so we sent a delegation to meet with them privately and we're waiting to hear what they have to say. But our determination is to remain and not to voluntarily leave. We think we have a right to be there.
The pepper spray incident, obviously you were there. Talk us through it from what you saw.
Many people got inside doors. You'll see photographs of that gentleman and others inside doors. And the man in front of him in the photos in the black T-shirt is also a provocateur. The two of them were there to cause trouble. The rest of us were there to deliver a message and to leave. We didn't want to shut the place down. Instead, we were greeted with pepper spray in the face. I didn't even get it directly. I got it 10 feet away, and it's horrible, horrible mm-hmm. stuff. And Air and Space Museum is not our primary target. We're waiting for Congress to get back Tuesday morning, and they will be hearing from us. But this is a museum that's marketing weaponry, that's pushing drones and missiles and bombs, and we don't have any museums promoting health care or housing or retirement security. You know, we wanted people to look at the museum a little bit differently. We didn't want them to be shut out, and I think the guards overreacted dramatically to a message that as we marched through the streets to the museum, people were leaving the sidewalks to join us.
So the actual confrontation there, do you think that was, the man is boasting, the fellow from the American Spectator, and the other one that you mentioned that he doesn't talk about, but certainly he would be involved in it too, but this fellow Patrick Howley is basically saying, I sort of escalated this into what it was. Is that your assessment, that without him we wouldn't have seen pepper spray?
Well, we already had some people inside dropping a banner and displaying messages. The guards were already on high alert, mm-hmm. and they were prepared to overreact dramatically, I think. But no doubt those two gentlemen contributed significantly to what happened.
Is it, if you're looking from outside at your own movement, isn't it kind of foolish for people who would be opposed to your movement to not necessarily to try to be provocateurs, because obviously they were to some degree successful at that, but then to come out and boast that they were provocateurs kind of blows the provocateurism, doesn't it?
You would think so, yes. They're advertising that our movement, in fact, was more disciplined and more nonviolent and more principled than it appeared, because they were the problem. They're advertising that. They may be asking for lawsuits as well.
Well, let me ask you about the Occupy movement. Are you surprised by this sort of tidal wave? Is an exaggeration, of course, and an unfortunate connotation anyway, but it certainly has taken root in a relatively short time and after a relatively inauspicious beginning in terms of public reaction to it. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, some of us have been trying to make this happen for many years mm-hmm. and are more encouraged in this moment than we've been for a decade. And a lot of it has to do with the economic insecurity being so widespread and the growing awareness that difficulties in one's home are not personal failings, but problems that everyone's neighbors are dealing with as well. And so there's this growing awareness that we're 99% and you're us and you should join us. And it's a message being welcomed by everyone. Cabbies are dropping people off mm-hmm. and not charging them at Freedom Plaza if they're protesters. You know, we haven't seen that before, and that's what seems to me to have the potential to snowball. There's no guarantees, but it's not that the wars have gotten worse or the policies have gotten worse. It's that the economy is hitting people.
Indeed. David Swanson, organizer of the October 2011 protests in Washington, campaigner for RootsAction.org. Great thanks.
Thank you.
All righty, that was David Swanson reporting on the museum fiasco, thanks to the asshole at American Spectator. Do you have anything to add to that, Gwen?
Well, you know, I see Sandy posting a lot of really good information in the chat
yeah.
room. And, you know, Atlanta, do you know what happened with the John Lewis thing in Atlanta?
No, this weekend, no.
Yeah, Atlanta had, you know, the great civil rights leader, who's a congressman, John Lewis, came down to their encampment in the park. I think it's Woodruff Park that they're in, and they're being threatened now to get the fuck out. Excuse my language. You know, F-bombs, like Pinko says on talk radio, they don't hurt anybody. It's real bombs that hurt people, so you shouldn't be afraid to say fuck, right?
Exactly.
The thing is that at Woodruff Park on when on the weekend, John Lewis, the great civil rights leader and congressman, came down and asked to address the crowd. And sticking with the General Assembly Occupy Wall Street protocol of group consensus, they did not find consensus to allow the politician to speak to the group. And it caused a little ruffling of feathers, you know, especially when you consider that Atlanta is an antebellum city that has a large, prosperous African-American community within it, and the major amount of people in the group were representing were, I'd say, as white bread as it gets. And so, but there was a lot of different, you know, colors there, and I'm not totally sure because it was just cameras swinging around.
Yeah.
However, they were sticking with the Occupy Wall Street protocol, which I think is really important. The Van Jones MoveOn.org system is out there working the Occupy groups right now everywhere in every community through the MoveOn.org group.
Oh,
and
I know.
I questioned it with my group at Occupy Lake Worth. I sent an email out because I got an email telling me to show up to the Saturday meeting for, you know, MoveOn's version of Occupy. And I went right at them and to the organizers of the General Assembly there and said, hey, listen, I want to be a part of this group. But, you know, hell, I'll go to fucking Fort Lauderdale, baby, if they're going to be, you know, I know more bars in that area anyways, but they're basically, if they're going to let the group get co-opted by MoveOn.org, well, I don't think they really, I don't know if they really got it, but they sent me back an email saying, oh, no, we want to stick with the protocol of the General Assembly. And from the Democracy Now! taping you did, that
mm-hmm.
show, which was yesterday's show, I guess, or yesterday's recording, it's up today.
Yeah.
She talked to Justin Weddies, who's been there since day one, and he's one of the General Assembly. He explained the whole thing. It's really elegant as hell. It is a beautiful form of democracy, the consensus, you know?
Well, and they're trying to keep the politicians out of it. And see, I can understand why they wouldn't let Lewis speak. I mean, he's a politician. I know he's a great civil rights leader, but he's a politician. And they're trying to keep the politicians out of it. You know, they're not giving those guys a forum. And as you know, I'm sure some people can see both sides of the issue, but the bottom line is he is a politician, and they're not letting the politicians get the mic. They're just not. And I think that's a good move. If he wants to speak to Occupy Wall Street, then he can do it on the floor of the House or the Senate. But I don't think he should be allowed to speak at these movements, at the protests or whatever you want to call them. I don't think they should allow the politicians to speak.
Well, because it does actually co-opt, but they're getting some really wonderful people there now. I know that Russell Simmons has gone over and spoken with Occupy Wall Street and copacetically, he's kind of toned his rhetoric in a different direction, which is nice to see. But they didn't allow Van Jones to. Van Jones was not, you know, allowed to co-opt the group there.
And I'm glad about that because you know how I feel about Move On.
Well, yeah, and I think you have every reason to feel the way you do because what they do is collect money and then just wait for the next new thing. But here's the thing, Naomi Klein, and I really, if you're watching, and thank you for putting so much Klein out there. I've been doing it too. I'm glad she's being, you know, given a platform to speak on because she is the one who is speaking most aligned with what's going on then, the protocols and the feeling and the whole movement down there at Occupy Wall Street, at OWS, as you say. She's really got it anchored. She's anchored. She's got it clued in.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I like, and she did a great piece in the Nation about the whole thing. And I was just trying to pull that up while I was talking to you, but I can't find it. But she did a wonderful, wonderful piece at the Nation on the whole movement. And I do, I adore her. I think she's probably one of the few pure voices that, you know, that gets out there and says what a lot of the protesters are, you know, they don't want to be called protesters, I guess. You know, what a lot of the occupiers are saying is, you know, hey, we're not picking sides in this, and we want fundamental change. We want justice. We want economic justice. We want, you know, every kind of justice there is, socioeconomic justice. And she speaks well to that, whereas Van Jones has got his own agenda.
Yeah, and basically his agenda has to do with the Democratic Party and supporting business as usual. He's not, you know, it's not a you know, groundbreaking or it's just same business as usual. But you know who does and who's up for reelection in my home state here, and by gosh, I hope he's reelected, who understands succinctly what is going on and what these people, all kinds of people, because he's heard it very clearly since he was in Congress the last time. Alan Grayson spoke on Rachel Maddow, I guess it was last night, and he succinctly said it.
I was going to play the Bill Maher piece where Alan Grayson bitch slaps P.J. O'Rourke down. And gets a standing ovation for it. I don't have it downloaded, so I'm going to play it live off the internet. Hopefully my mic will pick it up, so I'm going to try to do that now. Let's see how it turns out.
Oh, do it, yeah.
Is that coming through?
A little. Put your mic a little closer to the speaker.
Make a big profit. They make more of a profit by making it.
Don't get me started on Apple profits.
It's yeah. Oh my God.
Or is it simply that the Occupy Wall Street people like us flunked ECOG?
No, listen, Bill, I have no trouble understanding what they're complaining about.
Oh,
Wall
did
Street
you pass
helped.
Econ?
I was an economist for more than 3 years, so
oh,
I think
I guess
so.
You did. No wonder. Yeah. You were probably the grad student who flunked me in Econ 101.
No, but I would have if I'd had the chance. Now, let me tell you what they're talking about. They're complaining about the fact that Wall Street wrecked the economy 3 years ago, and nobody's held responsible for that. Not a single person has been indicted or convicted for destroying 20% of our national net worth accumulated over the course of two centuries. They're upset about the fact that Wall Street has iron control over the economic policies of this country, and that one party is a wholly owned subsidiary of Wall Street, and the other party caters to them as well. That's the real truth of the matter, as you said before.
And get the man a bondo problem. They found their spokesman.
Okay.
Well,
take your shoes off, get a bondo drum, forget where to go to the bathroom, and it's yours.
Listen, if I am a spokesman for all the people who think that we should not have 24 million people in this country who can't find a full-time job, that we should not have 50 million people in this country who can't see a doctor when they're sick, that we shouldn't have 47 million people in this country who need government help in order to feed themselves, and we shouldn't have 15 million families who owe more on their mortgage than the value of their home, okay, I'll be that spokesman.
Was Nicole Wallace, who ran George Bush's campaign or some shit, and the P.J. O'Rourke, who thinks he's funny, and obviously I didn't think he was funny at all. I like the fact that Alan Grayson tried to straighten him out, and P.J. still kept playing the part of an ass. But anyway, oh, and I was going to also say, as far as James O'Keefe, who keeps saying his probation officer gave him approval to go to Occupy Wall Street, the judge did not, and the last update that TPM Muckraker has had is that the probation officer can't be reached for comment yet. So I'm hoping that his ass will end up violating his probation at this point. Hello?
Oh, you talking to me?
Gwen?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Are you there, Gwen?
I'm here.
Okay, well, I didn't know if I lost everybody.
No, you didn't lose me. I really enjoyed Alan Grayson's performance on Bill Maher, although he wasn't performing. The thing about Nicole Wallace, though, you got to remember, here's a woman who let Sarah Palin walk right over her in spiked heels and keeps on letting it happen, even though she wrote sort of a glossed over, you know, novel about the truth of it all.
I hate the fact that Rachel Maddow thinks it's a big score every time she has friggin' Nicole Wallace on her show. Nicole Wallace doesn't bring anything to the table as far as I'm concerned, other than it gives Rachel Maddow a sounding board on the right, I guess. And that's one of the things that bugs me the most about Maddow's show is she tries to tone it down so that she can get some of the right wingers on there, and that drives me nuts. But I think Alan Grayson tried to keep it on task, whereas PJ O'Rourke was trying to make it funny out of it all, and there's nothing funny about what's going on to millions and millions of Americans.
Oh yeah, they're the bourgeoisie, you know.
Yeah.
And they don't even have the kind of money that it requires to be a part of that other stratosphere of class that they so enjoy, you know, sticking up for.
Oh, I know. And Maher's show is, you know, we also have to remember his show is entertainment. You know, I find a lot of, you know, I watch it based on who the guests are. And Alan Grayson, that was a fantastic, you know, monologue basically that he did trying to stick up for everybody when there's two out of the three panelists were basically mocking the entire movement. So I'm just glad that Alan Grayson was the only sane voice. And Bill Maher did try to, you know, stick up for the movement a bit there. But you get idiots like Nicole Wallace and PJ O'Rourke on there, and you're kind of like, well, what the fuck am I watching this for? Other than Grayson made the whole show for me. Anywho,
yeah.
Anywho, we've done our hour, and my back is killing me, so unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut this short for today. Our host, who's usually here, Gwendolyn Berry, who's on the line with me, bless her heart, will be back tomorrow, I believe. And I'm going to end the show with Rye Cooter's No Banker Left Behind, which is how I started every time I do it. And we're on daily. We're sponsored by Roundtree7.com, the number 7. And that's our sponsor. Gwen and I both write for that site as well. And Gwen also has a website of her own, Daughters of Isis, I believe it is. And my humble little blog is leftwingnutjob.net. But here we go. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same bat channel. And here's Rye Cooter with No Banker Left Behind.
My telephone rang one evening, my buddy called for me, said the bankers all are leaving, you better come round and see. It started in Revelation, they robbed the nation blind, they're all down at the station, no banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the station, no banker left behind. Well, the bankers called a meeting to the White House. They went one day. They was going to call on the president in a quiet and a sociable way. And the afternoon was sunny, and the weather, it was fine. They counted out our money, and no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the White House, no banker was left behind. We'll be right back. whistle-blowing, it plays a happy tune. The conductor's calling all aboard, we'll be leaving soon. With champagne and shrimp cocktails, and that's not all you find. There's a billion-dollar bonus and no banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. When the train pulled out next morning, no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker could I find. When the train pulled out next morning, no banker.